This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Hey, home theater friends, welcome to the Brightside Home Theater Podcast, the podcast that's all about the experiences, the sights, the sounds, the scenes, the people. And this is Takeover Tuesday, and with the new format, I got people here. I got Joe. I'm not even going to attempt your last name on purpose, but I do know your last name, but you are Joe in my phone. You are Joe, my IT guy. You have bailed me out so many times. So we sat down here this morning and I said, I have never been more comfortable sitting down to my computer than I was this morning to record with you, Joe. How you doing, buddy?
All right. Thanks, DJ. It's been a couple calls of frantic pace.
Yes. Well, I run two podcasts and I actually missed out on one recently that we can't talk about yet because we haven't done the announcement for. But my computer failed, and you have been unbelievable. You're just a listener you reached out to me, like a year and a half ago, something like that. But
something
back
about hard drives and
hard drive. Oh, when I started with the Zipedia. Yep. And I was learning all about the Synologies and the Zipedia and you gave me some. You've taught me so much sneaker tech. My sister, who is in IT for a huge company in Boston, I told her what sneaker tech was, and she uses that at work now, and she didn't even know. She had never heard that term.
What's actually sneaker net? See, I'm
gonna sneaker have net. There you go. Sneaker net. That's what it was. Sneaker net. Because what I was doing is I was taking and it was embarrassing now after the fact. But so
there you go,
I was.
Learn.
Yeah, exactly. And I had no idea. And that is how I learn best, is by making stupid mistakes and then realizing, oh, there's an easier way. So basically, I was copying stuff onto a hard drive, taking it from that room, walking across. And that's why you said sneaker net. And he goes, oh, you can just do this. And you just like leave it in the Zipedia and you can copy right to that. That's a computer. And I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome. So anyways, that's so, Joe, how do you say it here for the record? How do you say your last name?
Well, I butcher it.
You butcher your own name.
Well, technically, it's German, Austria, Germany. It's Hetzel is how Americans, we all pronounce it. Technically, it would have an umlaut over the O and there wouldn't be an E. So a whole bunch of variations, but yeah.
Okay. Whatever. So all right.
Hetzel is what you'll see online everywhere, but you don't have to say it. Joe's fine.
Okay, Joe. I think the first time we talked, I kept calling you Joseph because that's what it came up as. And you were like, you can call me Joe. I was like,
just okay. Not Joey.
Not Joey. Joey. Well, no. You are from Jersey.
All right. Boston.
Boston. Yep. There you go. Hey. Yeah. Oh, so thank you for coming on. This is awesome. This is, two Jersey boys week back to back. You commented that this week.
Yeah, Nelson from last week. I bet he could share some stories with me, and I could share some with him about the local scene.
Oh yeah,
of some of these places that have come and long gone.
Yeah, I saw you reached out on Twitter. You said something about like Wiz and like
the Wiz Tops. Yeah. These are New Jersey like stores where when you got your Bose 201s. You probably got them there because they were front and center and, it wasn't better off with something else. I mean, Bose.
Yeah, that's
you had that Acoustamass module with the 14 or whatever it was. And they even had a bass bazooka.
Oh, yeah.
That they used in stadiums.
Yep.
And it was like this pipe, like a drainage pipe with a speaker on one end. And they called it a bazooka before like Car Bazooka
right.
was the brand.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. It's Bose was the name. And it wasn't everybody. I think everybody tried Bose and of course you said you loved it because that's what the marketing was, is they're supposed to be fantastic. And then you get educated. and you find out, you're like, so what's the frequency response to those? Hang on, let me find out. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, no, because I couldn't afford Bose back when I was getting into this at, what, 15 years old?
Yeah.
Which would have been too long ago. I got those Yamahas I talked to you about.
Yeah.
Which I can't even find a model number on these. Somewhere I'll get you a model number. These little Yamaha cubes.
Yep.
And I had that in this Yamaha YST-120 bass module. That was
module.
My answer to Bose's Acoustimast I couldn't afford.
Yeah.
And I carried that thing on a hand trolley from J&R in New York down mm-hmm. to my house where I lived in Bayonne. And it was phenomenal. And then I upgraded to Monster Cable, speaker cable in between it.
And that made all the difference, didn't it?
opened it up, made it sound sweet, and I could hear nuances, and you know, I could hear whispers
because of your monster cable.
Yeah, oh, it made all the difference.
Yep, oof. Yep. And it's funny that, and I said that I think in our first Thanksgiving podcast with the guys, and I was like, the education that podcasting and guys like AV Rant and HT guys. The education that they're giving people on that stuff, like monster cables and HDMI and cables, things that it's ones and zeros. These things don't, or in the case of speaker cables, you need something that's going to pass the signal. And going to this crazy, crazy expensive cables, there were many, many years. It was, you just paid for what you thought you were getting more quality by paying more. And it was just marketing.
We didn't have the internet.
Right. And all you had was marketing, and you had to go by that in magazine articles.
And they would pay for the flashy ads all over the place.
Yeah.
And between them and then the next price, you know, Kimber or AudioQuest, the ones that have been around.
Yep.
Not, you know, with batteries on the cable, like, okay, let me charge my cable.
Right.
Not the charger cable. Let me charge my cable. Okay.
Yeah.
No. So now if I want a better quality, like fit, like build quality, I go to Blue Jeans. If I'm just doing something else, it's Monoprice or whatever's on sale on Amazon.
Yeah.
But I still have those monster cables, and I will rehook up this whole Yamaha bass system in my garage when I finish all the other construction. But yeah.
Is the garage going to be another home theater?
No, no.
It's no, just sound.
Woodshop.
Oh, woodshop with music. Yeah.
I have the main, like, it's a shared, you know, family room, yep. open concept,
yep.
which has got the main, that main being 75-inch, no projector. But it's got SVS Ultras and Focal Birds in the back, just a 5.1 for now. It's a PB2000 big box.
Yep.
For a single room open, I'd probably just go single bass again with a 16 since I moved, but... trying to get double bass in a home that is open to 1,600 square feet of other area.
Yeah, yes. It really would be like, it would hurt the house.
It's already falling apart. I just redid the bathroom, redid the house. It's
all because of subwoofers?
Yeah, no, yeah, no kids and
yeah.
fun with water.
Oh, yeah. I was just watching some scenes the other day, and my subwoofers... I don't know how long this had happened, but I went to watch, we'll get to a scene in a little bit, but I went to watch a scene and I'm like, where'd the bass go? And I got up, went to the back of my receiver, in my media closet. And I'm like, and it had just come out just a little bit, just enough that I wasn't getting it. I was getting, it sounded like decent bass, but it wasn't coming from my subwoofers. And it's not until you get to an LFE effect that you'd be like, oh, it's missing now, you know? And yeah. then I was like, I put it back in and I went in the room and I was like, there's what I'm looking for. There it is. And I'm like, I wonder how long that was like that. It's like, I mean, the last time I reviewed
it. Didn't give me a bad hum? It didn't know the words?
Nope. It was just, I went and looked at my rear subwoofer, my PB2000 that's in the back of the room, because it's actually in the room. I put a piece of electrical tape over the little light on it so that I don't get any light from it. So I pulled it back and I'm like, it's red. That's not good. So, and then I went and I popped in the RCA cable in the back of the, or the connection in the back of the receiver. And I come back and it's blue. And I'm like, there we go. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to rock. And then it, but it's little things like that happen all the time, you know, in with home theater. It's like, it's always something going wrong. And yeah, like you and I with the computers, always something going wrong.
Always. Yeah. And I just moved my rear surrounds up one joist closer to the couch when I had to redo the installation because of the roof leak.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah. So it's just been a, the focals are on the table and there's a bunch of plaster work because the attic is resealed and re-insulated and no yep. fun.
Nope. Nope.
So but fun in your theater.
You have fun. You have a theater. Yeah. You were saying before we started, you haven't seen an adult movie in what? Months?
Months.
You're watching kids' movies and Pixar yeah. and stuff.
Well, I got two younger, I mean, yeah. 8 and 13, and I don't mind it. When Toy Story first came out,
oh,
I was enamored with it. I mean, I used to do some beta testing of RenderMan,
yep.
which is Pixar's rendering engine. Well, I don't know what they still use, but it was their engine for the longest time, and I did... Wet-Wide used to do website design, and yep. I used it for graphic on it. It was in the New York Times and all this fun stuff because it was like it's a static 3D image, but it was rendered in Pixar software.
Oh, wow.
And that was back when a 386 was the fastest chip, if people know what that means. You're going, huh?
Huh? No. How many, oh, my God, talking about computer stuff, and it's like you'd tell me to do something, and I'd be like, all right, talk to me like I'm five. I'm like, what? And you just laugh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no,
the little red button on the left. Okay. But yeah, no, speaking of Toy Story, I remember seeing that my family and I, my brother and my sisters, it was Thanksgiving weekend on Thanksgiving Day. We were having Thanksgiving at my parents' and we were all older at the time and all out of the house, I'm pretty sure. Maybe my little sister was still at home. And we all said, let's go. And we went and saw Toy Story on Thanksgiving night after having dinner with the family. And I'll never forget, we all had a blast. It was awesome. And that's, they do such a great job with the home theater environment. That those, they're kids' movies, but watching all those Pixar films, The Incredibles and stuff, and the surrounds, what they do with the surround sound is fantastic. They really,
and then they, you know, they only merged with Disney couple years back now, 5 years ago, when it was just Pixar, what they could turn out for the budgets they had versus what Disney gives them now in budget, I don't see enough drastic difference. Then again, I don't have Atmos, and I always hear, you know, you and Tom and Rob, everyone's, oh, Atmos is okay, but I haven't heard it for myself yet, but I can't imagine it, the way people say, well, you could just, you know, I could put those old Yamahas up on the ceiling probably and...
Yeah.
See what it sounds like, you know, Velcro them, they're light enough.
Yeah. So
just put them up there, but
yeah, it's Atmos is one of those, it's a tiny, tiny step forward for sound. Like what it does, it really is, like they say, Atmos, and Rob says it all the time on AV Rant. He's like, atmospheric, that's what it's for. And it's like, you get, there are a few scenes, and we're going to talk about one today, and the movie isn't even in Atmos. It's in DTS 5.1. But the upmixing that you get and the way they use those overhead channels in the upmixing, it's very atmospheric, and it's fantastic. But you can, and now this particular scene that we talk about in a little bit, I went back and forth between 5.1 and using the upmixings, just straight 5.1 and the upmixing. And the difference was, it was still a great scene in both situations, but using the upmixing, having those overheads enables you to move the sound smoother around the room and give you a little bit more of that atmospheric. It just sounds a little bit more natural to what was possibly going on, right?
So it might be even more directional. I know it's directional. You're not supposed to angle them straight down.
Yep.
In a open family or open concept room, I'll have to try it at some point. But of course, I'd need a new receiver because my 4200W I think is like one step behind and only does two overheads. And if I'm going to do it, I might as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do four, probably put SVSs up there so I don't have more holes in my ceiling and repairing roofs.
Yeah. It's funny because listening to Tom, it's a lot of work and for a little payoff, right? It's like, yeah. And that's why he says, like, sometimes it's not worth, like, 5.1 is really good. It's like, and the way they mix it, it sounds so good. Even in just straight 5.1, not being upmixed, you can, you know, like Christopher Nolan, Quentin Tarantino, they all go in 5.1, right? And it sounds so good. But you get that little bit, there is a difference, but it's a lot of work. It's like, I put mine in, I was like very, I don't regret doing it. But at the same time, there are very few instances in movies that you get the actual directional and go, oh my God, I can hear that right over my head. It sounds like raindrops or it sounds, there's very few of that. It's mostly, it's the nuances of a movie that it really does affect.
So if the cable came out like your subwoofer, would it take you an extra week to notice the Atmos missing or the subwoofer?
The subwoofer I noticed right away. Because you can't help but not notice it because there's feels that you just don't get. You're right. With that, if you dropped out, that's a good question. If all of a sudden my Atmos went away, I don't think you would notice it. It might be a little while.
Depends on the content, of course. How heavily they're mixed, they're throwing the sounds up there.
And then the other thing is you would have to know the content so well to know that, hey, it's not there. Right.
And or be I like, imagine, you know, you see a helicopter and you're like, no, not up there.
Right. So, trying to think of something that, yeah, it would be very hard because it's one of those things. If you just listen in 5.1 and that's all you're used to, the scenes sound great. You know, we all remember, well, not all of us, but if you went back in the day and it was so exciting to get 5.1 discrete and hear that guy walk around the room, right. And you were like, that's when we got discrete. When we finally got 5.1, which was AC3, you could hear a guy walk around the room. So if that's all you're used to, then all of your scenes are based out of that. And you'll feel like it's going over your head just the way they manipulate those five channels. With Atmos, it's a little bit, like I said, they can utilize those channels so you're not trying to get your left rear and your front rear to make it seem like it's over your head. Now you're actually doing that. So in your case, like your question, if you pulled out, like accidentally just lost all your overheads, as long as your system's still running the 5.1 mix, it would be difficult. It would take you a little while because you'd have to know that exact scene so well. It's that minor of a difference. It really is.
And I have enough speakers laying around here to give it a whirl, but the wiring, getting into the attic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Up another hole through.
Yeah. And what's funny is my thing is the way it is that much an atmospheric effect, that's what enables them to say, hey, just plop the speaker on top of your other speaker and we're going to bounce it off the ceiling and give it to you here because the sound you're already getting at 5.1 is almost doing that anyways.
Didn't
right?
we have the conversation about Bose and bouncing things?
Yes, exactly.
That was their thing. Their tweeter went off to the side, and
right
the mid range or whatever they called it came straight at you, and they said it would bounce this around a triangle if you put it in the right corner, and yeah,
and it's all gimmicks, all fun gimmicks that make you go, oh, this sounds fantastic. It's like I saw on Twitter somebody said, "Is this the cheapest possible Atmos sound bar?" And it was a Polaroid. Company. Polaroid, yeah. the camera,
like, yeah,
and it was a Polaroid soundbar for like $89, and it said it was an Atmos soundbar.
I bet it had a subwoofer too.
Oh, a bass module, bass module. Yeah. But yeah, nowadays they call them subwoofers, and you're like, no, I bet you that thing doesn't even get below 80. it's like, all right, it's not a crossover at 80. That's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Oh, you were saying before, and I said, let's hold this. Let's go back in time, your bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
The theater. And you started that. And I love my bedroom theater when I was a kid.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, you know, my parents weren't, no one else in my family still to this day is really into any of this.
No.
I got to have 5.1 or I got to have speakers and I don't want all those wires everywhere.
Right.
So I had a RCA, I want to say it was a 27-inch RCA mounted on this ceiling yoke. It was like a L-shaped thing that had a flexible bracket, you know, lag bolts into the choice in the ceiling of my room. And yeah. I had an Advent center channel, you know, with a ratchet strap.
Yep.
Ratchet strapped to the top of it. I had the 201s on those, you know, those shelves you can buy on shelf standards. They put the little clips on. I had them in there. And I had these, well, to be honest, the first speakers I had were out of an old 84 Crown Vic that I put into some sort of box I found. And that was until I can get, I think it was somebody was throwing away, you know, a console. You know, used to go to Macy's or Fortune Off.
Yep.
Or these kind of stores, and you get this Sony or I think it was Onkyo even back then, but it was these brands that made speakers in these cabinets.
Yeah.
And I had a set of those that I dismantled because the cabinet was too big to fit in the room. So that went into another box. And then eventually I finally got these the Yamahas to mount up next to the Advent on the ceiling. And I had the 201s in the rear. And that was, you know, we didn't have the center channel. I had a Kenwood receiver. I think I still have it. It still works as an amp. Again, going in the garage. And it just, you know, Kenwood to a Sony STR or something that finally had discrete.
Yep.
But I've done, you know, we didn't have disc. I had a basic VCR back then. You know, we didn't have Blockbuster. It was my mom and pop shop on the street. Cinerama was one of the names of them. And you know, that CD looking curtain they had when you were a kid, like, what?
Yes. That's a whole new world back there.
Now the internet, forget it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, you'll never know. You know,
I know.
It's like Stand By Me of home theater.
Yeah. It's funny you say that about we didn't have Blockbusters. Somebody, I think just this morning I saw her on Twitter, somebody had put a picture up of Blockbuster, then described what it was like on Friday nights to go there. You picked out your movie, you got your popcorn, you did all this. And I'm like, and it's funny you even mentioned it because I was going to bring it up myself today, is that back when we were kids, Blockbuster, I remember before Blockbuster, and it was all mom and pop video rentals. And as a matter of fact, somebody put out, this was months ago, somebody put out what was your first VHS tape? And it just took me down that rabbit hole of like, oh, I totally remember. I wore it out. And it was my parents bought our first VCR in the 80s. We went down and it was expensive, like a couple hundred dollars for a VCR. And you got a free VHS tape with it. And it was Beverly Hills Cop. And when I turned like 17, this was probably when I was 14 years old. And when I was 17 years old, they were like, here, you can have this. I didn't have a TV in my room as a kid growing up. And then when I was like 17, 18 years old, my parents for Christmas gave all four kids TVs for their bedrooms, probably because they were just tired of us hanging out with them in the house. So they're like, here, go to your room and leave me alone. So we all got TVs. I got a VCR as well, and they gave me that tape. I was the oldest in the house, and they're like, here, you can watch this. So I watched that tape over and over. So I went on eBay just like months ago, and I was like, I really want that in my theater as a memory. So it's sitting in the back of my theater. I went on eBay and bought it. I'm going through my closet just like a week or so ago, and I look up on the top shelf in my closet in my bedroom, and there it is. The original Beverly Hills Cop tape.
Not the unreturned rental that you didn't ever bring back.
No.
And
no, we owned it.
$50 for it.
Yeah. No, they were like 70. It was $70, $80, because that's what it cost them to replace them early on. Yeah. Because it wasn't until, and I talked about this years ago on I think on this podcast, that it wasn't until like E.T. got sponsored. And that was when... movies started to drop in price because, like, I think it was Pepsi. Pepsi
or Reese's, one of those two.
Yeah, but
now they're probably owned by the same company anyway.
Right, but that's what brought the price point down. So it was like you could buy it for $19.99. They sold E.T. for $19.99. But last time I brought that up, people were like, no, it was this movie. So it's right around that time. But before that, you could. That's why everything was rental, because they were so expensive to produce those tapes. Yeah.
And what store were you going to go to get them? Well, it certainly wasn't Amazon.
No. And that's why they only had like two in the store. Remember going down for that awesome, you couldn't wait to watch a movie and you're like, oh, it's rented.
If you don't go into like Barnes & Noble, it's like walking and seeing the book department or the CD department now. But now the vinyl department's bigger than the CDs.
Oh, really?
I haven't been in. Some places have records and shelves all over the place, more so. And now finding discs, you know, I hear you guys talk about it, all the podcasters, streaming. You know, you said I work in tech. I've been doing that for too long, 28 years. For, you know, as a career, starting. But, you know, these cable companies, they're going to charge you for your bandwidth sooner or later. These companies and all these cable cutters, they're going to, what are you going to do? Yeah. Hey, what else can you do? So, you know, it's kind of sad that, you know, VHS or VCRs opened up when you could rent a movie for $2.99 and a VHS player was down to like $60. You got a bigger audience. But, you know, when you go from theater and pricing, I fear for what they're going to do to internet connectivity pricing.
You think that they're just roping us in, like, for now? Like,
no, the equipment on the back, people don't realize, you know. Well, it's everybody making a profit, right? It's the Ciscos. Yeah. It's these bigger networking companies. The gear that you need to run that much bandwidth through. You've seen it with your router the other day when we had a call.
Yeah.
So, you know, the gear is just phenomenally priced.
Yeah.
So when you say, oh, I got a gig to my house, holy cow, you know how much stuff on the other end of that is?
To get it to you. Yeah.
And it's the same with everything. Like, well, why does this cost so much? Well, are you factoring R&D or are you just looking at, you know, why is the latest Denon receiver $1,600 not even for the flagship? It's not the physical parts. It's not the parts list. How much R&D? How long did they have to work on that? With the receiver, I don't quite get the substantial price increases because it's not that much new. What's the newest tech in a receiver? Class AB, Class D, those amp styles have been around for...
It's right now, I'd say it's what? 2.1, HDMI 2.1? Which you're getting.
It's just the chip they're buying. What are they innovating on? What's next?
Right. Yeah, you're right.
So, with an iPhone, they just put a couple more features and some software... They manufacture their own chip to handle it. How much are they really spending on R&D? And how much more is it just profit increase every year?
Wow. You're depressing me.
like when I say SNL used to be good, right?
Yeah. This is the bright side, Joe. This is where we talk about the fun content, not how depressing it is that we get our content.
Fun content. You got to give me some... I got to get you one scene. I forgot to get the timestamp on it from a kid's movie that will shock your pants in 5-1.
Really?
Yes.
What is it?
As long as it's on Disney. It's called Dinosaur, not the little cartoony one. It's this flying scene in Dinosaur. I'll get you the timestamp, but the movie's called Dinosaur. And I think there's two of them on Disney Plus, but wow.
All right. Get me that, and I'll put it in the show notes. Can you get it to me in later today, I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. So it's in Dinosaur. So what happens in the scene?
It's this like pterodactyl flying through a ravine, grabbing eggs and swooping and mountains and, you know, Disney animated water. It's a pretty good scene.
Awesome. And you're in 5.1 and you said it sounded awesome. So
I don't know if it's in Atmos on Disney Plus.
I'll have to check it out.
Or what the state of play is on that one, because it's an older one, but wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, since we're talking scenes, let's talk about this. I have a scene from this week. iPhone unavailable. Oh,
you said
no.
The tech would go good.
My phone just locked me out. Try again in 1 minute. All right, so let's keep chatting, and then because all my information, my notes are on my phone. Actually, I can talk about this scene because I've watched it. It's 12 Monkeys, but I'll have who... sent it to me, and as soon as my phone opens back up, what the hell is this?
You jinxed it with the
I know.
Good tech talk.
Yeah,
bright side tech.
I know. I'm like, what the hell is it? I'm staring at my phone. Try again in 1 minute. Are you kidding me? All I did was put my password in. All right. Anyways, so the scene is from 12 Monkeys, and I think it's at, if I remember correctly, it's at 38 minutes and 10 seconds, And it's a scene when Bruce Willis, he's kind of in like, it looks like he's at the bottom of a well, but he's kind of, he's in the straitjacket. He's in like an insane asylum. You remember the movie, right? Did you see 12 Monkeys? Yeah,
no, I got this one. Thanks.
Okay.
Not a kid's movie.
Yeah, no. And no, that's not a kid's movie. But in this scene, the voice, you're not sure if it's a voice in his head or somebody up above him is talking to him. And in 5.1, the scene is really good. It moves from the left front, but the way it's balanced out in 5.1, it sounds like it's halfway down your wall in on the left. And then it goes to the right rear, and then it goes to the right front. And then the scene finishes up with all that, that voice talking to him at the center channel. But then when you use the up mixing, it actually, it moves that sound over your head. And there's, at one point, Bruce Willis looks back over his left shoulder up into the air, and you can, it sounds like it's coming from up there. So they took that, the up mixing is taking and utilizing for atmospheric effects, that sound. But this is that scene, this is that idea that we talked when we were, when we first got 5.1, of somebody walking around the room, and that voice in his head is bouncing and moving around the room. And when you up mix it with Neural X, really, really nice. It sounds so good overhead. And the atmospherics of being in that well are also enhanced using the Neural X. In 5.1, the echo of being in the, in that, it's not a well, but you know what I mean? He's in that area.
It's, is it, I mean, is it overdone like the Yamaha church mode? Or, you know, because all those reverb effects, all that can be done with two channel, to be honest.
Oh, yes.
A lot of.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people don't realize you can walk around a room in a properly done, with a binaural, these specialized recordings that you can hear that effect on of, you know, who's above you, who's behind you with just headphones on.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, is, I you always hear people joke, is the next, so you got Atmos this year, 10 years from now, we're going to be joking about perforated floors to put speakers below you so someone can yell from hell?
Well, that's what I want. That's
what
I want.
The yell from hell.
Yeah,
that's what we're going to call it, by the way. That's what it's got to be called.
The yell from hell. That's awesome. I love it. The yell from hell. That is so cool. But that, I've said that. Where do we go next? We have overheads. We have surrounds all around. You can have his.
Rob's got his wides. He's the only one, right?
The what?
The wides. The front
wides. The wides. He's got the front wides. Yeah, and people, yeah, you can go. But you're all around you at ear level. You can put as many speakers as you want. And the idea of, supposedly the idea of Atmos is it's supposed to upmix however many speakers you have. The system should know,
right,
depending on what you, that's
in,
the basis
in
of
nature,
it.
In nature, it is possible to have sounds coming from above you.
Yep.
When does the sound ever come from below you? So if a movie's supposed to take you out of the experience, right, and make you into their world,
yeah,
isn't that going to be the real shocker to your system? Like, your body doesn't know how to deal with that?
Sound from below?
Yeah.
Well, you, little animals scurrying by on the ground, that comes from below.
You'd be getting itchy.
Well, did you ever, there's a, not a ride. I think it's a Pixar. I think it was, not, maybe it's not Pixar. Ants, I think.
Yeah.
And there's, at Disney, you can go in and watch a movie, and it's tactile, too.
Oh, it hits you in the back and all that stuff.
Yeah, the bugs go through you, and you feel them in your back. They go under you, but you have that I believe they have
this. And they smell it up, and oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have the speakers under the seat, so you hear that going on underneath you as well. So that's the stuff that I want in a home theater. I would love to add, like, three channels on floor level, down the side, on front to rear, right? And then you would be able to hear stuff go on underneath you. Like, it would be all, like, obviously you don't need a subwoofer for that, but it would be all higher frequency sounds to give you that. I don't know, what would artists do with it? What would the sound designers do? There's so many different things they could do, like the creaking floor. You're in an earthquake scene, and the floor below you is creaking, and now that sound is coming directional.
And you and I both know you don't have to worry about bass in those kind of channels, because it could come out your sub anyway.
Correct.
So why don't, you know, that if you want to see a technology advancement, you know what LED strips are? People use them all over their place in their houses around window. Why can't we make the speaker on that? And then you just put some speaker tape along the bottom of your couch or the bottom of your riser. You wait.
Speaker,
I don't have
tape.
The patent on it. Yeah, why not?
Oh, wow. You got,
you know, well, Yeah, I should have patented that before I said it right here, but
yeah. Speaker tape for the Oh wow. Imagine if they could, I mean, it'd be 100 years from now, we'll never see it, but make that sound really good. Then you don't have to worry about your, I mean, you could just line your screen with speaker tape and it would sound fantastic.
It sounds crazy now, but so did just 99% of other inventions back when they first came out. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're going to have something that physically moves air somewhere for some things, but
right.
those kind of effects.
But a higher frequency, yeah.
Even if it's 4 inches wide, you know, just a speaker tape.
That's funny. Across it. Look at you. Look, at, you're taking Bright Side Home Theater to a new level. We're inventing stuff now. All right, my phone is back open, so here's the tweet. It was from the shark, the one shark, at the one shark. He says, hey, DJ, just watched 12 Monkeys last night. It's been 25 years since I saw it. Only 5.1 DTS HD, which I upmixed using Neural X, but damn, check out the scene that starts at 3810. One of the best use of height channels I've ever heard. He said, hashtag demo worthy. And it really was. Definitely check it. That's the scene that I just described. It is at 3810, and it's you'll enjoy it too in 5.1, but it'll be more, you'll still feel like it goes over your head a little bit, but like you said, it's like you can do that with 2.1, 2.0, and I had the experience of that, of that demo.
But do you find that the DTS stuff, because I remember when I first got it, like when I heard DTS versus Dolby, like, oh, this is way better. And of course, we know why now. A little bit more bass tweaking generally, but do you find the DTS older content upmixes better than the older Dolby?
I don't know. I would say probably on, if you like consistently, yes. Because I, just like we said, DTS, all like back when I was getting laser discs, when you got something in DTS, it just sounded better. You knew that it sounded better. And it's only because Dolby has so much content that they can have really good. They both can put out the exact same quality, right? But Dolby has so much content that they have a bunch of content that's not so good, right? But they have some content that's spectacular. DTS seems like, because they're the little brother, it feels like, and they're always competing and trying to keep up with Dolby or beat Dolby, that they have very little bad content. So if you took the older stuff and you upmix it nowadays, it's going to sound really good. Whereas the Dolby, you might just have a bad Dolby cut from it, because Dolby didn't care. They're like, well, we'll just put it out.
Well, whoever pays them.
Right. And I
guess DTS could be the same, but it shocks me that they're even still around, to be honest.
Who?
The DTS people.
Why? They're so good.
Yeah, but all the other discs went out, you know, every disc format war ends at something.
Yeah.
How did that not wind up ending at something? And then, you know, do you have Aura 3D support in your place there?
I don't have it. My receiver can get it, but I don't have it. I would love to try experience it.
I'd love to see the competition, but I just get shocked every time.
I see what you're saying.
You know, you see these other format wars go away, and you know, here's your Blu-ray, right? Not BD, and
so
how does that happen? But anyway,
do you think that DTS?
I like it better.
DTS?
Yeah.
Yeah. It, well, they're literally. It's. I mean, you know, it's just ones and zeros. It's the exact same thing. But you're right. The quality just seems to be better on DTS because they don't put out anything bad. It feels like.
Yeah, that's it. The reduced count. They don't have the volume, and they don't have the same strategy in terms of marketing and licensing.
Right.
So they, you know, good, fast, and cheap, for good, accurate, and cheap, or whatever the thing is. Pick two, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I use that line in my work all the time. It's like, you can have it fast, you can have it perfect, or you can have it cheap. Pick two. It's like, you can't have all three. Trust me.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you think that DTS, I've never thought of what you just said, how that format war, like, why didn't one get canceled out? The only thing I could think is, do you think it had anything to do with the fact that, I mean, it was backed by like Spielberg right off the bat?
That's the problem. Well, that's the reason. Yeah. You know, if George Lucas and Spielberg said, ah, well, only, you know, when they first came out with Star Wars, and you're always talking about, and
yeah,
and he had, you know, your theater will support this. If he said DTS, would Dolby still be around?
Good. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, and it was kind of like, so you have Lucas back in Dolby, and you have, you know, DTS being backed by Spielberg, and it's a friendly competition between the two of them, because they're literally friends, and we allow it as a consumer to coexist because we love both of their content. And it's, I think the competition is what actually drives both of them. And that's why we get such great stuff. You know, I don't know if it would be the same world if we only had one of them. I don't know if we would have we would still have good content, but we wouldn't have great conversations about it like this. That's for sure.
Sure.
You know, but that's interesting. I've never thought of that. Why didn't that go away? Like everything else is, we've had format wars and, yeah, that's interesting. Never thought of
that. I
guess, you
know, we still have spring clips on receivers. So,
yeah. Yeah, I haven't. Honestly, yeah, I know. That's my first receiver was a Techniques, I think.
Mm-hmm.
From
big brand.
Yeah,
big Techniques. Parametric EQ.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you had to have all those things bouncing up and down the graphic equalizer. Like, oh wow, don't now forget, it sounds.
Before we didn't have LEDs back then.
No,
so you had little like lights came out.
Yeah, that's where you knew, like, oh, now it's on, but why aren't I hearing anything? Oh, yeah. My speaker wire fell out.
Yeah.
My $100 speaker wire to my car speaker.
In a shoebox.
A Pioneer 6x9 in the back channel.
That's...
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right, let's get to some of these... Let's get to these comments that we have here from this week. And I have a whole bunch of them. It's been a great week. So first one from Gurinder. He said, this week's show, I have to agree with the Darth Vader scene in Rogue One. It is my favorite scene in all of Star Wars franchise. It is how badass I always imagined Darth Vader to be when I was a kid. When rewatching the whole series when I was older, I was disappointed in Vader. He didn't seem too menacing. Rogue One Darth Vader is how he should have been in the whole series. And this goes back to the conversation that I had with Rich Keefe, and we were talking about Darth Vader and that Rogue One scene. And I couldn't agree more with what Gurinder's saying there, because I think for all of us fans that grew up with Star Wars, as a 7-year-old, when I first saw him in that opening scene and he's choking somebody, lifting him off the ground, and then later in the movie, he chokes somebody using the Force. That just sat in your head for the next 3 years till you saw him again. Now I'm 10 years old, right? And you were just so afraid of him. But Gurinder's so right that when you go back and watch them as an adult, you're like, that's really not much going on, right? And it's not until that Rogue One scene.
Other horror characters or more menacing characters, you know, Silence of the Lambs, the guy doesn't look, you know.
Yeah.
Look at somebody like that. How would you rather see him in your dreams or Darth Vader?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
It's menacing in a different way, yeah, but it's the guy's just the character creation back then in original, I'll just call it Star Wars, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then in Star Wars wasn't at that depth. It was, look at this sci-fi movie we came out with.
Right.
It wasn't, I don't think they were trying to get this character, deep character development back then. You know, think where we were back then.
Right.
And then, you know, and then they had the other chance to do it. And, you know, as Gurinder said, they nailed it.
Right. Yeah. It's.
So how come it wasn't there in Star Wars?
Well, it didn't need to be.
I don't think we were there. Yeah.
Well, it didn't need to be. Because to Gurinder's point, when we were kids, we were petrified of him. He was the badass. But it's not until, like you said, with Silence of the Lambs and other movies, it's not until we're older and we've been desensitized that we go back. But when you go back and watch it again, well, now you're not that little kid that's like using your imagination anymore. Back then, yeah. Lucas left it to your imagination. He just gave you a couple hints that like scared the crap out of you for the next 10 years. And now as an adult, you go back adults don't use their imagination just the same, like exactly the same as a kid anymore. But now we get that literal view of him in Rogue One, and you're like, that's it. That's what I wanted on the screen.
Right. So if we had all the CGI back then, would they have not used a real human actor for Darth Vader and made him some CGI that was 10 feet tall and then lifted the guy and you'd see his feet clearing the floor by 6 feet?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, would he have been, you know, hanging up and with his arm up in the air, and now you get this guy that's 6 feet off the floor hanging by his throat?
Right.
But back then it wasn't there.
Yeah. And again, look at Jaws. We'll go back to Spielberg now. And it was the effect that you got, it was not knowing where the shark is under the water, right? And that's the fear of sharks. Well, the way they were making that movie, it was because the failure of their, you know, animatronics in the water that they had to keep putting off showing the shark and showing the shark. And then it ends up being like, what's so fearful in that movie? It isn't what they show you. It's what they're not showing you. And your imagination going, what's down there? And you're afraid to go back in the water. You're using your imagination. And if they had given us that Rogue One scene in 1977, where's the payoff later on? We've already got it. So what ends up happening is like, I'm not saying like George Lucas made 77 and went, you know what? 40 years from now, we're going to have this awesome scene, you know? But it's that's what enabled it, and it's the masterful storytelling of using that and letting the viewer use his imagination is what I think. That's what's so much fun about Star Wars as a kid,
that's the bright side of every movie, isn't it? Letting you either get that escape, get that fix on that joy of holy cow, look at that character.
Yeah. Look at you, the professional there, working the title of the podcast like in that. And everything. Thanks. You're like, geez, Misty, huh? Did you study before you came on? So Gurinder goes on to say, he said, my son was like, DJ should review Ready Player One. He's like, I think he forgot that was one of the first episodes of your show that we had heard. Now that you have a Lumigen, how do you think Ready Player One in 4K HDR compares to the 3D version? So Gurinder going way back, because I did do Ready Player One and I reviewed the 4K versus the 3D. And I will say this.
No spoilers, DJ. Still sealed upstairs. Come on.
You haven't seen it?
I told you.
Oh, well, that's an old movie.
Old?
Old. It's probably 3 years old.
I finally got my 8-year-old wanting to watch Ghostbusters. So as soon as the surrounds go back up on the ceiling and that room is done.
Ready Player One's one for kids, though, I think.
We got 4K Ghostbusters coming on.
There you go. That's an afterlife or the original?
Original. He's got to see the original first.
So good. So good. But yeah, the Ready Player One is probably on par with that. As far as for kids, I would say, because there's some scary scenes in Ghostbusters.
And, yeah, of course.
Ready Player One, I thought, I'm trying to think for a little kid, for an 8-year-old, I'm pretty sure it would be okay.
He's pretty good with that kind of stuff.
But as far as, what's that?
What was a movie with the big Pac-Man flying around the city?
That was Free Guy. That one? With the video games? No.
It's video games, yeah. With the
it was like the digital bits,
the high score, yeah,
something like that. I can't remember the name of it.
Anyway, he likes that kind of stuff, so
yeah. Ready Player One's really
good. That level
of
horror.
If you haven't
read. Go ahead.
If you haven't read the book, you'll really enjoy it. The people that didn't enjoy Ready Player One as much had read the book, and it's a loose adaptation of it, but it's still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I used to like, I really was into horror movies when I was grammar school, grade school, whatever you want to call it. A friend of mine's parents were a funeral directors.
Oh,
we used to go watch horror movies.
Yep.
In the house that was connected to the funeral home, as a, you know, yep. What was I, between 8 and 13 age? You want to talk about a Friday night,
yep.
Fun night.
One of my buddies I grew up with, his family owned the town funeral home, and we'd go to like Halloween parties at his house. And you were always like, where are the bodies? Yeah. And it was like, but like when you went over when you were a little kid, you thought like there's just bodies lying around the house.
And then
obviously, no, it's actually a different building that they worked out of. It was they lived across the street from the funeral home. And then,
oh, this was attached.
Like, yeah, yeah.
That like, one. You go down the stairs and there's the parlors and
yep.
Down the basement is the fridge.
Yeah. Well, I remember the first time I went over to his house and you went downstairs. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going into the basement of a funeral home. This is not going to end well. And I'm like, my parents dropped me off here. What are they doing? It's like, I'm like, taking your kid to a Halloween party at a funeral home. I'm like, this can't be good. So, but growing up, actually, my buddy now runs the funeral home. He took it over from his father still works there too. But anyways, when I was in high school, I think it was my senior year of high school, I went as Freddy Krueger to a Halloween dance at the school. And I spent the afternoon melting the stuff they use on people's yeah. faces all over my head. And it was like, I was an art student. I made myself look like Freddy Krueger by putting that. So I went up to the funeral home and I was like, what can I use? And Mr. Arteri was running at the time. He's like, here, use this stuff. And he gave me this big jar of the skin wax or whatever it is. And a friend of mine helped me melt it all over my head. And it took us a couple of hours because she had to do the back. I was doing the, you know, and I got and that, the color know,
now
in
you
there.
You got a Party City and you buy the mask for $5 and you're like, oh,
yeah.
But back then,
oh, but this was like real. It took me hours to get the stuff off of me, too. But it was worth it because people were coming up to me. I made the glove and I actually
the fingers.
But I made the fingers out of cardboard. But then I put a piece of wire at the top of it. And then I spray painted it all silver. That way, when I went up to a chalkboard, that little piece of wire would scratch. So I could go around like in the gym or wherever we were and be like, ee! It didn't sound like cardboard on metal. It actually sounded like the metal. Oh, it was everything.
Anyway, 3D Ready Player One for Corinne.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get back to that. But yeah, going with the Lumigen, it makes my projector so much closer to an OLED, right? And now I am seeing like 3D and 4K. It is very, very close. And if you get a really good 3D, which Ready Player One is really good in 3D, it just brings you into the movie a little bit more. But then you jump back to the 4K and you're like, I'm still into the movie. There is a nice depth there, just not the same. But the sound is better in the 4K because you have the Atmos. So it's a little bit deeper. It's weird. It's what you're in the mood for, to be honest with you. I hate to be on the fence like that, but it is that close now. And I can't say which one, it's what I'm in the mood for. Because sometimes you put those glasses on and it just, you can reach in, but going to the 4K, it's brighter. And there, you're just not, you don't have as deep a depth of field, but there is still a nice depth. So, I don't know. How's that for an answer? Is that on the fence?
The last 3D supported device I had was a 40-inch Samsung, maybe about 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's not the same on a smaller screen.
I don't have anything that can do 3D now. And when I saw it on that, I wore the glasses maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
You know, that was back when apps on a TV were only there to show off. They didn't have, you know,
yeah,
Hulu and all that stuff. So they didn't have the content, and I never really got it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think TV on,3D on a smaller screen, I don't think it plays as well. It doesn't get, you know, you don't have that. Like on my screen at 110, you really feel like you're going into the scene. But if you're watching on a 40, even a 55-inch TV, you're still in that room. You still see your room around it. It's a smaller screen.
I'm trying to remember. When I was, you know, younger, much younger, you'd either have to get a magazine or a newspaper, and you'd get the red and green glasses to watch like King Kong on something, and they would only come with some promo material. And what size TV were you watching then?
Yeah, exactly. 30.
No. You were watching a 32, maybe.
No, my parents, it wasn't even. Probably 24.
Black and white.
24. No, it had to be color.
No, but I mean, we had black and white. I see these, you know, back then I had maybe a 9-inch.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was these tiny, you know, with a dial still, no remotes yet.
No. Oh, no. You had to click the channels.
But you got that 3D content. I remember getting those red and blue or red and green glasses.
Yeah, you'd get them at 7-Eleven or something.
You had to get them when 7-Eleven wasn't even around yet, I don't think. You had to get them from like the newsstand or something.
Right. Yeah, there was a promotional for whatever was going to come on TV. Yeah, yeah. And I remember Jaws 3D.
Coffee creamer.
Yep. Jaws in 3D at the theater.
Yeah.
Great movie. All right. Next up, we got from Andy. Hey, DJ, I've been listening to your podcast since Thanksgiving 2020, and I listen to AV Rant and HDTV and Home Theater Podcast, too. At any rate, you keep discussing streaming versus disc, and I just watched this YouTube video about it. I would be interested in your take on this. I largely concur with the points made in the video. Enjoy listening to you, Andy. Thanks, Andy. And I had already seen, I clicked on this link. I'll have it in the show notes. So it's a YouTube video about how streaming is catching up to disc and everything. And it's funny, as soon as I clicked on it and I heard the guy talking, I was like, you have to go listen to it for yourself or watch it. But the guy contradicts himself in the video, because at the very beginning of the video, he tells you that he thinks that streaming is actually on his display is actually better than what's on disc. Then he spends the rest of the video explaining why disc is so much better. I've watched it a couple times even before Andy sent me this email, and I was like, and then when he sent it to me, I'm like, this is weird, because he goes into all the bit rates and everything and breaks down why disc can support so much better. Because streaming, you can only send so much. And Joe, you can speak to this with your computer background. It was weird. You have to see the video for yourself to understand what I'm talking about.
I'll grab that video. But a guy contradicting himself is quite common, unfortunately, a lot of times on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, probably on here, we do it all the time. But it's your human nature. But yes, streaming shouldn't be looked at as just streaming. I got to put a petabyte of, forget gigabytes, forget. Put a petabyte of data from point A to point B to 5 people. I can do that. Put it to 500 people. Gets harder. Put it to 5,000 people. How many simultaneous streams to how many different output devices is Netflix, Apple TV, Paramount, Hulu? How many are they putting out the door at once?
Right.
It's all about time. I could do one petabyte stream to your house. We could take a fiber optic. I'll take a Excella. I'll bring it up there. Now I'm transferring a petabyte. But when I got to do it to 500,000 people across the globe, streaming falls apart pretty quickly. That's why putting a disc in your hand. Now, a disc doesn't have limitless bandwidth. Neither does a fiber optic cable going across the ocean. So at what point do you say it's not a battle of streaming or disc? It's how much demand is there for this content. And right. If your content demand isn't at stellar amounts, yeah, your disc is going to, holy cow, look how much they could fit on the disc. They don't have to compress it. The movie was only 45 minutes. Movie's 90 minutes now. We don't want to put out 2 discs. We don't want people to flip a disc or switch discs. Streaming doesn't have that limit. So it's pros and cons, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. You look at the price of gigabit routers that you probably have, you know, you have, I have. Versus what I use at work, stuff like 10 gigabit. Mm. The price difference there is massive. Cats, you know, your Cat 5e, Cat 6 cabling. Now we're talking Cat 7. We're talking, you know, whatever cat or dog next. It's, and at what point, you know, I have friends that have fiber to their house after the pandemic or during the pandemic. They're like, you know, screw it. I got all this extra. Hey, drop a fiber right at my house. Now I have up gigabit, both up and down. And where do I want to go? So it's, I don't think it's a streaming disc war, but I think the streaming, the convenience, the, and don't forget how, you know, I don't know how many listeners you have. We don't give those stats out, right, DJ? It doesn't matter. how many people would even be listening to this conversation and understand what we're talking about, and how many people actually care about it? It's not that great of a number in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
And, you know, you said it's the bright side, so I won't go down deeper, but, you know, how many people is good enough is good enough? I remember you, was it you or somebody brought up an example of he watched a movie on his phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he rewatched it.
Yeah.
So how many people is, you know, is your phone good enough? Ah, it's good enough.
Yeah. You're right. That's the thing is we are such a, I say it all the time, we are such a niche. We are such a small percentage of the world, right? Never mind of just like taking in media, but just even shrink it down even further to like the entire world. We're such a small percentage. And that's honestly what amazes me. And I say it all the time when I'm reviewing a movie, and it gives me chills because they're doing all of this special stuff in the sound designers and all the things I talk about in my scenes. It's all for such a small percentage of people that actually care. Like you said, most people watching it on their phone or watching it on a laptop or just watching it on a regular TV in the living room don't get to experience the stuff that we experience. And at the same time, for me, the streaming versus disc is streaming is just one more link in the connection. And if you which is a variable, right? So if you're not getting a good image or your sound doesn't sound good, it might just be that stream at that time is affected to like what you were saying on what it takes to get that image and sound to you, right? So that's, whereas if it's on a disc, you've just eliminated a huge variable in your system and you're going directly from disc to display. And that's, so there's, you know, like if it doesn't sound good or you lost your signal, it could just be as simple as an HDMI cable. Whereas if it doesn't sound good and it just went away, you're like, all right, is it my HDMI? Is it the internet? Is it my internet? Did the company shut down? Is it just me to the street? Is it this? There's a million variables just by streaming.
Well, that's another great point is, you know, streaming, who owns it? You have a disc in your hand. They can't take that. You know, oh, it's going off. They just announced what, Marvel or someone's going off Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody's. Oh, well.
Yeah. Although, yeah, the Jessica Jones, Daredevil. Yeah. All of those are going away.
Good luck with it. Yeah. Now, if you had a disc in your hand, you know, and then there's a matter of, do you want the content or you really want the tech?
Right.
You know, the tech might be better on streaming for some, and it is, but not all.
Right.
But you got the disc in hand. No one's taking it from you. Well, maybe somebody, but depends where you live.
Yeah. I won't say anything. I already made the joke. All right. Let's see. Oh, G. Cornell. He just won't let this go. Reference volume. He keeps bringing this up. And this is good. He goes, you're in a no compromise state of the art home theater built by Dolby Labs, outstanding speakers, electronics, and room acoustics. Would you experience all the lower volume surround sounds that you enjoy without the need to play at reference volume? And that's what he says. And then he goes, can you give us a list of 10 titles and 10 scenes to pinpoint where you discovered a sound at reference that you had not previously heard? Then you discovered only playing at reference, meaning like, give me 10 movies, 10 scenes of like where,
get
nope.
Your homework, DJ. Get your,
right.
Get your
and I was like, out. I'm like, I don't. And he said laughing faces. He's joking.
Nah, that's fun.
Great
that's
guy.
Funny.
But I do have one scene.
I'll give you that dinosaur scene I was talking about earlier.
So at reference level, it's
you know, it depends. At reference level, are you still running a curve on the bottom? Does that, I think someone's mentioned that.
Dynamic EQ
stops at certain, but does it really? Or is it just trail off? You know, we're not in the minds of Denon and Onkyo and whoever's making your receiver.
Yeah.
Is it truly turning that off if you have it switched off? I don't know. I know what I hear. That's it.
Right. Well,
so yeah, go ahead. What's your scene?
So my scene is the one from District 9, the one that I absolutely love. It's at, I think it's at 12 minutes and 15 seconds. And it's that bass rumble that it sounds like, or I should say feels like, when you shut off a big truck and you get the engine goes, Right. And you can feel, that's the scene that I went to when he sent me this, and I wanted to hear that and do it so I'd have it fresh in my head, and my subwoofers weren't on. That's the one. And I was like, what the hell? Where'd they go?
And so you
like,
really didn't hear it.
No. And then I plugged it back in. I was like, there it is, right? Well, I did the experiment. I listened at reference level. Clearly, I mean, it's nice. You can feel it in your seat. At minus 5 dB, you can still feel it. At minus 10 dB, now it's more of a sound than a feel. At minus 15 dB, yeah, you can still hear that and feel the boom. You can, it, but it, you don't get that as much of a tactile feel. So the lower you go, you're losing it. And I have Odyssey EQ, like the dynamic EQ on. So the lower I go, it's going to bump it a little bit. But the other thing is if you're running a dynamic EQ, you're also pumping up sounds that you now, dynamic EQ is based off of human hearing. If it goes below a certain level where you can't hear it, dynamic EQ will pump that back up for you. Well, but now if there's a sound in the scene that doesn't go below that, that doesn't get pumped back up. So now you're affecting what was originally intended because certain, now they're bringing scenes up. So there's nothing wrong with listening below. If you always listen at minus 10 dB, you're going to experience everything the way you always want to experience it. And that's perfect. That's for that person. I love starting at reference. So that's where I start. I used to not start there. I used to not have the ability to start there. My room couldn't run it. I couldn't run at reference level until I got my AC Infinity fan because my receivers would shut off. They would clip out. Now I installed that, boom, because I'm in a media closet and it would heat up in that area above my receiver. I put that AC Infinity fan in, no problem. I never even get above, like, I think it's like 85 degrees, 86 degrees, and because it reads it right on top of the thing and that it runs perfect. But yeah, I just like to listen at reference, but I do, I mean, you lower volume, that's, you're lowering the volume. How do you not, you know what I mean? You're going to lose sound.
There's a certain impact to listening at substantial volume. I mean, there's a reason concerts do it. It's not an every hour thing. You know, you go to concert now, you probably should wear headphones, earplugs.
Yeah.
But there's a certain impact to just having volume. It doesn't matter. Bass, treble, mid. It's just the overall, like, whoosh. You know, the Maxell tape guy.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That feeling of you're watching a movie and holy cow.
Yeah.
It's just a different feeling. And it's, of course, just what you like.
Yeah.
And what will you miss something specifically? There's too many depends on that. It's dynamic, right? It's dynamic EQ that you're introducing. You don't know exactly when it doesn't have like a little overlay on the screen. I'm boosting.
Right.
You don't know, but I listen to what you like.
Yeah. No, I love, we go back and forth about a bunch of stuff and I love that stuff. I love the conversation. I love the arguments. It's fun. This is what we want to do. I mean,
if you really wanted to see it, I guess you could take out a calibrated mic and have it running off something else, watching your levels and see if a level shows up that you didn't have showing up in an audible range.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But enjoy the movie, right?
Exactly.
There you go again.
Come on, G. Cornell. Bring it. No. All right. Tweet from John Z. Johnny Speakers, who does have a white van. Love the listener interview format for Takeover Tuesday. That was a lot of fun to listen to. Well, John Z, Johnny Speakers, I want to get as many people as I can. I give everybody the opportunity to come on, and then we'll just keep rotating back through. I'm having a ball. Are you having fun, Joe?
Sure.
All right.
Great distraction from all the construction.
Carl Ricicci on Twitter also says, really great little conversation. It brought up a lot of New York City memories from the 70s and 80s. Cheers. He grew up in New York as well. So he listening last week, he really enjoyed that.
So now he hangs out at Sound Exchange.
He's actually, I think he's down in Austin now.
Oh.
Carl's down there. Great guy. Great conversations we have on email as well, back and forth. Alvin at At AlvinCole71, at BrightsideHD, enjoying the conversation style takeover Tuesday. I got a mini DSP last year after watching Youth Man reviews. Definitely a learning curve, but really fun and worth the end result. Constantly tweaking it, but it's part of the hobby, right? And I'm like, I'm really interested. Have you ever messed around with a mini DSP?
No, but I used to do, like in high school, I did the sound for the plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had access to all sorts of fun, like stage production stuff. And it was the equivalent of, like, you know, tweaking people's floor mics and lav mics and all that kind of stuff. It's something 20 years ago, I would have been loving, you know, I'm lucky I had a Radio Shack old fashioned, an analog SPL meter, you know, the D-weighted, the classic one you could actually walk into a Radio Shack.
Yep. I still have mine.
But a mini DSP is what, the next iteration of that, really, if you think about it. Now you're playing with channels, and it's just a much more granular play around. And sure, if, you know, this is why we're here talking. You like to play with this stuff. Go ahead. I love it.
Yeah, I know. And that's what's got me interested in it, because there are movies that, like, I always go back to the Thor Ragnarok. Everybody knows that one. It's so disappointing because it has such a great soundtrack. It's such a great, fun movie that you listened to and you went, oh, that fell flat. Literally, it just fell flat. But if you could, at a push of a button, already have something put, you know, programmed on a mini DSP to say, hey, I know I'm going to, and not have to go in and just tweak all of my settings, which I do. I'm like, if I could just have a push of a button and it's going to boost this and boost that and just be like, all right, that's the way it's meant to be heard, that would be fantastic. And I'd love to mess with that.
The tracks, don't they make tracks for people with the butt kickers or the tactile transducers that go along, that, you know, and I can't remember what it is. It wasn't Laserdisc. Something had like an additional track that went along with something.
It's the seats. There are motion seats.
And that have the action.
I've looked it up and it's super expensive, but that's the next level as well. It's HT Guys was talking about it probably a couple years ago, a year ago. And I remember looking into it, and it's thousands and thousands of dollars for one. You got to get the seats, but it's more than butt kickers. It's actually the seats move. Like it had to be a couple years ago, because Mandalorian has it. You can get that track. Yeah. And you watch these shows and you get to experience it while things are moving, like you're in the ship or whatever. It's wild, but so that's people, a super expensive thing.
You have your
thing.
Mini DSP, so if you had a track for that and people shared them on, you know, minidsp.com, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Patent that one.
Yeah. Look, we're inventing stuff all over this place.
But, you know, if you could do that, and then you see what this guy likes, is that, you know, the next level of enjoyment for you? Sure.
Yeah, that's a good idea. On my webpage, I got a new comment from David Soat on Nelson's Theater. He said, just heard Nelson on this week's Takeover Tuesday. It's really great to match the face to the voice on the podcast. You guys did an incredible job this week with the switch up and format. Loved it, and this theater is insane. So yeah, if you go to my website and you see, I have a bunch of theaters there. Nelson's one of them, and his is absolutely insane. He's got a lobby area. He's got obviously popcorn machine. He even has the theater rope. The red velvet theater rope in his lobby area. It's awesome. When I saw it, when he sent me those pictures, when I first sent them to me, I saw the theater rope. I said to my wife, I'm like, he's got theater rope. Like, I want that. Adriano the Nerd at Adriano Tweets 87 says, really enjoy the conversation format episodes. Keep them coming. Now you need to get at Legal Beagle OK, my buddy Steve, on to talk about how great the Fifth Element is. And Adriano, there's negotiations in the work, but we're going to throw down. Someday, Steve and I are going to throw down. We're going to talk about Fifth Element. We're probably going to go at, he'll probably hang up on me when we're talking Midway. I don't know. Someday, if we can, it'll be my first international podcast, because he's over in England. So that would be fantastic. I love your thinking, Adriano. Someday. Theo, nice new feature. Well done, DJ. Theo's awesome. I love his things. Dan Carpenter at Skippy Turtle says, it's great hearing quote, older guys telling their stories about HT.
Well, you're older than me anyway.
I know.
Not like, by much, but.
No, I know. I too started in the 80s with HT. Music was a big deal for me before that. My parents managed a small cable company in the town we lived in. We had HBO right when it was available. Other kids had Atari. We had cable. That's awesome. I remember when we got cable. My parents didn't run the cable company. We didn't get it right away.
Did you have the push button box or a dial? Did you have the dial or did you have the push button box?
Push button box at the top. yep. We had a push button box at the top. That's how we got our first remote. Yeah. Right?
Well, because no, the remote was wired, right? That little, I had the cable
early on,
channel.
Right.
With the,
yep. But that was kind of the draw in the 80s. Here's more old man home theater talk. That was kind of the draw in the 80s. Like your dad wanted to get cable because he didn't want to have to get up and change the channels anymore. Right.
Once no commercials. What a concept. That was the other selling point.
Some
you're
of them.
Paying for it. There yep. was no HBO didn't have commercials now.
Right. yep. Exactly. You watched the whole movie without any commercials.
But I remember just like enjoying watching the HBO, how they made the opening with the little flyovers with real models and the swirling lights on the HBO.
Yep. And the music.
There's a whole, I don't know if it's.
There's a YouTube video of it.
No, there's like a recent podcast about how they translated that sound, that music track to HBO Max. They still give you that. Old man remembering HBO and just like a few notes of it. I'll find a podcast. I'll send it to you.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah. Let me know.
Iconic as a grown up wanting to watch movies.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Waiting for that movie to come out on that month.
Yeah.
It's coming next. You read your TV guide.
Did yes.
You
a little? Yep. And you, when's it on? Or as a kid in the 80s, those rated R movies, and you sneak out of your room at 10 o'clock at night, and you're like, okay,
what are you talking about?
Can they hear me? Can they hear me? It's like, got the volume down, you're watching rated R movies. Oh, ooh. Yeah. Cinemax as a kid. And it's funny because my dad, he was one of the early adopters of, remember, the Black Box. Right,
yeah,
where you could, I
have any channel you wanted.
Get every single channel. I paid from when I moved out. I paid for a Black Box, but early on, all you had to do was connect two wires in the back. There were two because everything was connected, like you said, not spring load, but you unscrewed, and that's how you connected this to your TV through the antenna connection with the screws.
UHF with the little flippy switch.
That's how you connected. But if you ran like a piece of tin foil or something and you jumped these two wires in the back, you would get all the channels. And the cable guy was a buddy of my dad's. He was like, this is how you do it. So he basically turned our regular cable box that you give to everybody, turned that into the Black Box. You got everything. So we got like Cinemax. But what my dad would do is he would disconnect it at night because he knew I wasn't going to be doing that. But then it didn't take me long. Early home theater days to figure out what he was. I'm like, how is he getting this? Go to the back of the box. And be like, oh yeah. So I get up at night, reconnect it, watch TV.
If only they had the internet, right?
Oh yeah. That was our internet. Let's see. What do we got next? Oh, Adriano sent a picture from, this is from my, he screen grabbed my image from the Terminator podcast I did on Friday. That came out Friday. He screen grabbed it. It looks like it's, I don't know if it's the Pope or whatever, holding up the Terminator symbol. It looks like he's like, what? Like that's the, it's a great screen grab. Great screen grab. So then I already talked about the one shark and the 12 monkeys scene. So we can go past that. G Cornell, Cop Shop, entertaining, well-recorded, excellent sound. And he says, quote, knowing a professional hitman is on the trail, resourceful con artist, Teddy Muretto punches a cop in order to be arrested and put safely behind bars. The hired gun is determined to complete the contract and finds his way inside. So that's for the movie Cop Shop, which I believe is with, what's his name from 300? He was in.
I'm horrible at actor names.
Yeah, me too. And it's, I used to panic.
That guy, but, you know, that's
yeah,
the
he
guy.
Was in, he was the main character in 300. He was in Greenland. He's in this movie. Him. Him. That guy. Yeah. IMDb, that guy. He'll come up. But yeah, I want to see Cop Shop, and this makes me even want to see it more now. So I've seen the trailers for it. It looks good. So G Cornell, thank you for the tip. Be definitely checking that out. So, and that will also be in the show notes. YouTube comment for Terminator. Theo says, really good review and a great movie. How come I didn't get a really great review in a great movie? I just got a good review. Come on, Theo. Theo also says, he said, I have at least four versions of this movie, and yes, I want to watch it again. Because I say at the end of the pod, did I make you want to take it off the shelf? And so I made Theo take it off the shelf. And Mark V made me want the 4K too. Yep. Terminator in 4K. Did you hear that podcast yet? It just came out Friday.
No, I haven't listened to it yet, but
okay.
Yes.
I think that movie is going to be spectacular in 4K. Hopefully we get that someday, but I think there's so many good scenes in that that could use that restoration that you just be like, that the some of the flashback scenes, like what we have in Terminator 2, which a lot of people aren't crazy about that restoration, but I still think that restoration, it is better than what we used to have. Could it be better? Yes. But I think it's still better.
A movie like that could benefit from the Yell from Hell.
There you go. The Yell from Hell. The Yell from Hell. Mark V sent this out this morning, this being Sunday morning as we record. He says, at Brightside HT, at First Reflect, at HDTV Podcast. The grainy one is Voodoo 4K. The nicer looking one is Apple. Also, the Voodoo stream has a lot of judder. The Apple stream is what I wanted the original Ghostbusters to look like when streaming. Apple servers are doing their job bandwidth wise. And he sent two images of pretty much the exact same scene. And when you look at this, I recommend going and check. I'll put a link to this Twitter feed, this tweet, in the show notes, because the pictures that he sent, you could see the grain, and then you flip over to the other one and it's as clear as day. And that, I think, excuse me, I think that gets to exactly what you were talking about earlier and what it takes to send out these signals. And it's an amazing difference.
What'd you say? That one was Apple, one's Voodoo.
Voodoo. Voodoo isn't good.
Look at the bank accounts of those two companies.
Yeah.
Who's got the server farm? Who's got the content distribution network in every state in the country now? I mean, they've got servers all over the place shoving out Ted Lasso internationally.
Right.
And that's not any... The amount of bandwidth required for live action with no special effects and CGI blended in, your compression ratios are crazy on that kind of content. There's no super fancy effects. Voodoo just... Again.
Well, the other thing is
and Apple, where are they getting their source?
Yeah. Apple is who has more people watching it, Apple or Voodoo? You would think the Voodoo signal would be better because it's got less pull on it, right? But it's
right.
Not.
But they don't have this, they don't have the content, they don't have the bandwidth, they don't have these switches, all the stuff that gets it from them to you. They don't have it. It's Apple's boat.
Yeah. And I mean, it's evident here. It's as clear as day in the picture. As soon as you pop open the picture,
grainy ghost just doesn't look right, right? You need to see it ghost like.
Yeah. And it also that grain, it takes away your HDR, your dynamic range, because that grain becomes like when your eyes blend it, it looks a little, makes everything look a little white, like washed out. You're right. Yeah. Your blacks are a little bit grayer because you have this white grain over it. This grain, it gives it a different.
But is it? But and the thing is, it's not true. You said you took art, right? Stuff. Mm-hmm. You're well aware of what, like, you know, high ISO images are and mm-hmm. what true film grain looks, silver emulsion,
right,
looks like. This isn't real grain.
No,
like built into the film.
No,
this is artifacts coming across your stream or compression problems.
Yeah, it's just a grainy image, and it's a great example. Thanks, Mark. It's an awesome example of, and it's, he's now, this is where I said earlier, he's eliminating a variable, meaning like he is the lone source for both of these things. So it's a good comparison of what Apple can do and what Vudu can do. And he's that one. So it's not like what you're streaming at your house and what I'm streaming at my house. That's a variable because you might have a better feed. Maybe there's more draw in your neighborhood that could cause any of this stuff, right? He's that one part. At that same time, he took these pictures and it's like, I watch it on Vudu. I watch it here. You know, and it's the source. So that's the variables. All right. That's it for comments for this week. Thank you to everybody for commenting. Next week, we'll have a whole bunch more comments, I'm sure. And I have another conversation coming up for Friday. I will hold off on who it is just in case things fall through. And I have to put out a movie, but I have another home theater conversation coming up on Friday. I can't wait for that. Been a long time coming for this conversation. So hopefully everything holds true, but, you got anything else, Joe?
Nah, I can't believe, you talk about Die Hard being a Christmas movie. I got one Die Hard story for you. So I used to work downtown.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in, third Die Hard where it's at the Federal Reserve. I used to work half a block away. I almost got hit by Bruce Willis riding a bike, walking on a sidewalk in the scene where he takes the bike with his partner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That bike, right?
Samuel Jackson.
Bruce Willis riding a bike in a white t-shirt and almost ran me over walking down in downtown New York City.
Really? Like, really. For real, you were
for real,
there?
Like, inches. He was swerving around, playing around on a bike before they were filming. And there was, you know, fresh kid wearing a suit. Going to my IT job in fintech company, and I almost got nailed by him.
That is awesome.
And he just went, "Oh, sorry, man." And I'm like, that's Bruce Willis.
That is awesome. That's one of my favorite movies as well.
I got to watch them film all those scenes where they fake blew up. You know, they had foam blocks.
Yep.
Coming out of the subway station I used to take every day.
Oh wow,
it was good. I mean, it's just. Put me right back. I was like, I gotta watch that movie, and still back then I couldn't just go watch that movie again.
That is awesome. You almost got hit by Bruce Willis, and I know that scene too when he grabs the kid's bike and he has to get across town.
Yeah, But they used to, you know, they play around just like any other.
Oh yeah, they're bored. All right, setting up for another take. All right, I'm gonna go for a cruise and pick off this guy on the sidewalk.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Pretty funny.
That is awesome. Wow. That's,
but you know, in New York, obviously many people have many brush-ins with more people. I mean, you're in Boston, you get more too, but
yeah,
you know, it's just funny that, you know, much you talk about Die Hard and it just, I'd never forget it. It's just in that character, the white t-shirt, you know.
Yeah.
I won't call it what we don't call it, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep the podcast clean.
I had a very close, I almost had an opportunity to be in, I think it was the upcoming Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. It was filming in Worcester, and my future son-in-law works for a construction company, and the where he was managing, the site that he is managing, they were filming on, and he had to help manage that. And he's like, when we're going to be filming, he goes, do you want to come down and be an extra in the movie? And I was like, yeah. I'm like, that would be fantastic.
And then see the top of a hard hat.
Like, hey, yeah, exactly.
CJ's hard hat head.
Yeah, that's me. But I can't remember what happened. He never texted me that day, or I couldn't get down there. But they filmed on his job site for a week. I'm pretty sure it was Multiverse of Madness. It was very recently. It was this past summer. And I was like, oh, that would have been so cool. But yeah, there are opportunities. Like, I remember when they filmed Blown Away. I just talked about it recently. They filmed that in Boston back in the 90s and with Dennis Quaid. I think it was Dennis Quaid and Tommy Lee Jones, and that the Irish bombing type movie. And it took place in Boston. I remember when they filmed that, The Town. I remember when they filmed that, and there were people asking for extras, but I've never experienced it myself, but you getting run over by Bruce Willis. That's cool.
Literally like this. I forget how old I gotta look up. When was that movie? 94 maybe?
Yeah, something like that. The original was in, maybe 93, 94, something around there, because the original was 88. I want to say 2 was in 90, so that would probably be 92. Yeah, I actually like that movie more.
I like that movie a lot.
I like it more than 2. Yeah. I do like 2. I do like 2. Still kind of that Christmas movie.
1 to 3. I'd hop over 2.
No, I do like 2, but I like 3 better. Because I liked the way the surprise ending, the way things worked out at the end, that nice twist to it. I thought that was a lot of fun. I thought Samuel Jackson.
We're worried about spoilers on that one now.
Yeah. Well, we didn't say what it was
at the end.
Yeah. And and it actually all ties into the first one, too. It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Good deal.
Good. All right. Did you have fun, Joe?
Sure.
All right. And
wonderful
to encourage others to partake. How was your experience in hooking up and getting, coming on? And was it simple? Everything's
well,
like,
the fact that it comes, you got to use Chrome. Like, no, you don't.
Actually, you don't have to anymore.
It actually says it, right? I'm like, no.
Yeah, I'm on you Edge. Don't. Use Edge now. So I'm on Edge here. And you're on Mac.
Yeah, I'm an IT guy that uses Mac. What a shocker. But I've done other podcasts. It's an easy one click. I mean, if you don't have all the equipment and external mics and headphones and all that, that's a QR code on the screen. You point your phone at it, you could be on this.
Awesome.
It doesn't get much easier for the net.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you can use it from your iPhone. And if you have an earbud, headphones is kind of what you want. So we don't get an echo, but it's pretty super easy. You've got a nice setup. You've been on other podcasts. You said you've been on 2 others and they're now defunct. So, I hope you're sorry, not the DJ. Jinx. what were the 2 other podcasts you were on?
One was about barbecue. So I also do a bunch of cooking.
Yep.
The other one was about, photography, which I still do as well.
Cool.
Bunch of stuff.
That's awesome. So now you're on 3, and this one is not yet defunct.
It's not getting defunct. Well, no. It took years.
Yeah.
Like tens of years. Like from at least 20 years before one of them went defunct.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
As a podcast?
Yeah.
What was it? They were around for that long?
No, they weren't around that long, but it stopped publishing. The site's finally offline. There's no there's no lookup for it. But
right.
Oh, you sold it because one of them was sold because it had a really good name.
Oh, wow. Wow. I don't think I'm getting sold.
Brightside Home Theater.
Yeah, nobody's buying me. Can't buy me. Can't afford me.
That's right.
So, all right, Joe, this was fantastic. Thank you to everybody for listening. Joe, thank you for coming on. You're my...
Hey, DJ, did you have the right mic on?
Oh, my God. That was, I was so embarrassed when I did that. And I was just like, so I have a bunch of things for redundancy so that if I lose, like you and I are on right now, I'm not even recording online. I'm recording here with OBS. So I use that as a redundancy. On that podcast, I didn't use it. I was so, I can't tell you, I'm embarrassed at how stupid I was and how dumb. And it was all because I was excited to talk to Rich, to hang out, talk home theater with, he is a local like sports radio guy. So it was like, all my friends were like, you're talking to Rich Keefe. I'm like, yeah. I also knew that in Boston area, I would have more people listening, more of my friends and family listening to this particular podcast. So,
and then when he mentions it on air, holy cow, DJ's listeners go through the roof.
I'm like, oh no, I did pick up a bunch of Boston listeners on Twitter and stuff. And I just, all that pressure hit me. And it's like, I'm just a normal, stupid ass guy that likes home theater. And
was he in the end of the day?
Oh, no. I know that. I wasn't threatened by him. It wasn't him. He's a great guy. And it's kind of embarrassing to say that, it was more of the pressure of the moment, and that I knew, like, I overthought this stuff. He said something to me. I don't know if it was on air or off air when we were talking, and he was like talking about home theater, and he goes, I just started overthinking everything. And it's like going back and thinking, that's what I did that day. And it's like, I was setting up and I just screwed up, and I overthought everything too much. And then I missed out. And then of course, because the one we're on right now, you could see your name, my name. I can go under mine right now and look what's connected: the Logitech Brio, my Scarlett mic, and my speakers. I could see all of that. And on my on that day, I never went and looked. I just and here's the thing: in my ear, I could hear my microphone because live, that's what I was getting. But what I was putting out over the internet was from my Logitech.
And you're that's not you're not running any kind of external board here, are you? Like physical board?
What do you mean?
Like a mixing board outside of the whole computer realm. Do you have a separate like mic coming in on XLR, you know, whole?
Yep.
Yeah. You have a whole physical board going in with the USB.
Yeah, I have a Scarlett 8 in the room we're sitting in right now where I podcast. This is the room that I have set up. I have a Scarlett 8 with multiple ins. I can do sounds like this. Like I said to you, can you hear this? Yes. That's a lightsaber. I have a soundboard here. I can do all of that. When I recorded with Rich, I'm in the process of moving into my theater to be able
walk
to record.
In. Yeah, I've seen that.
Right. So I have a smaller Scarlett. I have a Scarlett 2, I believe it is, a 2.2i2, I think it's called, or whatever. But it's the same, and I run the same mic. I run, you know, XLR into that because I wanted that quality. I tried other things. If you listen to my podcast, I was trying other things. I just couldn't get the same quality. And it's fairly new, me being in that room. And it's just like home theater. You have issues. You're plugging this in, plugging that in. And I have to set up a laptop. And that night when I set up to talk to Rich, I screwed everything up.
You loosened your subwoofer cable at the same time?
Probably. There you go. See? Look at you. You are a podcast professional. You're bringing it back around to close out the show. Look at you, Joe. Fantastic. Thank you again so much. Any other segues? Any other tangents we want to go on? We've only been talking here for almost two hours.
Yeah.
Time
flies. I'm not looking forward to getting back to the drywall.
There you go.
But I do want to get that movie back on, so the birds got to get back up.
There you go. There you go.
Vocal, not the other one. I love the birds.
Oh. All right. All right. Let's get out of here. Hey, thank you all for listening. If you're not already following, follow along. Click follow, subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. Go to YouTube. Hit that one, too. If you'd like to support Patreon, thank you to all my Patreon supporters. You go to Brightside Home Theater, patreon.com/Brightside Home Theater. Sign up for a monthly donation or don't. Either way, it's great. And if you want to support the podcast in other ways, just follow me on Twitter at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com, and you can be part of the content. You can even come on the show like Joe did. Thank you, Joe. Really appreciate it. Everybody, have a great week. I'll be back on Friday with a YouTube video and a conversation. But until then, go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.